Good morning. And apologies to those online. My phone is disconnected, so we're still streaming. I checked that, so I can't change anything about the stream right now. So you're just at the view that you're at. So enjoy. We have had a wonderful time. Oh, is that on?
Is that on?
We've had a wonderful time here at VBS so far. Again, like David said, it's been awesome. But one of the things I did want to kind of mention is that this was supposed to be church camp week, and we are sad that we weren't able to go. And if you are wanting to personally support OBE and the church camp, we're going to make that an opportunity in the offering if you wanted just to note that, or if you're doing on our mobile app. We still have to pay for the 300 spots there to stay in good faith with church camp or the Camp Siloam and with OBE. So if you are willing to go ahead and donate a little bit towards that, that would be awesome to help support them. And as we look forward to next year, being able to go to church camp. Interestingly enough, I was always slated to talk and to speak this morning. Wade was going to the national convention, and then he had a wedding for his niece. Sorry, I'm easily distracted this morning. I didn't take my heart meds, so there's no telling what I'll do or say. I'm kind of like emotional. I may cry. Who knows? But again, I will try to stay focused. Sorry, Laura, I love you. Yep, it's going to be fun. So I started praying through, like, what it is that God was going to lead me to. Like, God, what do you want me to talk about? What is it that they're dealing with? And he kept kind of bringing this thing up as to what I should talk about. And I'm like, I really don't want to talk about that. All right, fine, I'll talk about that. It's something that I've dealt with since I've been old enough to cognitively even think, which is the topic of anger. And I know it's stereotypical to think about of an angry little Irishman, but the stereotype holds true. And for the sake of myself and for ours, God has given me plenty of opportunities over the last couple of months to kind of record my record against anger. It's not good. So this morning I thought I'd go through, just to sort of go through some of my top most irritating things that I've listed. I started, and what I found, it was actually kind of a punch list that God wants me to work through. But these are some things that I think are kind of universally irritating, but also they irritate me. So number one, parking across two spots. Like, when I see that, like, I don't get it. Like, I want to be the guy that, like, parks like perpendicular. Like, I don't get it. Like, what? How awesome do you think your car is, or you are? Number two is people who take their shoes off on an airplane. Airplanes are gross. It's like you're in a giant, just like, bathroom. Like, it's essentially just a flying bathroom. That's what we're in. And people take and they walk around and then they stick them up next to you. It's like, this isn't your couch. What's wrong with you? Number three, standing too close while you're waiting in line. It's not a race. It's a line. Like, we're queued up for a reason. I don't get it. Like, why are you breathing on my neck? Number four, not being in the moment. And this isn't just like at like dinner and stuff, but like when you come and like talk to me, and then you're like, you started this conversation. Don't get bored. What's going on? Number five, walking your cart straight down the grocery aisle. You see how happy that lady is? She's happy because she doesn't know there's a line of people trying to get around her. It's wide enough for two carts. It's just like driving. Like, did we forget how that works? And unfortunately, when I got married, I married someone who walks down the aisle with their cart. I watched her, I'm like, oh no. What have I done? Number six, chiggers and fleas. Jesus, what were those for? That's probably in the top five questions that I'll have when I get to heaven. What are those for? Just to irritate, terrorize us. Oh, those are definitely bugs for punishment. Number seven, asking for advice, but then either arguing with the answer or not taking the advice you asked for. Arguing with the advice or not taking the advice. Why did you come ask me the question if you were going to argue with me? If you already know the answer, then just go do that. I'm not going to validate your answer. Number eight, man, I'm getting riled up. Number eight, stacking trash over the lip of the bin. At work, I call this trash Jenga. And whoever loses when the trash falls over, then you got to pick it up. I'm like, stop it. We're adults. And once it gets to the turn, just how hard is that? That was easy. Stop playing trash Jenga. Number 9, talking at a baseball game. And not just like quiet conversation. Like, that's normal. That's normal. But when you talk through the whole thing, just talk and talk and talk. Why are you here? You could have gone somewhere free to just go and talk. I don't understand. I'm just trying to watch the game. And then the last one, and I don't know what it is. It may be genetic. I may have gotten it from my mother. I don't know. But this just washes all over me. Like, I just want to leave. Like, I'm getting goosebumps now. Smacking while eating. Chewing. It's like I can just, like, in my head, I can see the, like, stuff being chewed and, like, then the saliva going in it. And then it's turning into, like, a mush. And I'm like, just close your mouth. I don't want to be a part of this. All right. Today, our primary text is going to be in 1 Samuel 25, verses 1 through 35, if you'd like to start making your way there. Or if you're using the YouVersion Bible app, there's a little more button on the bottom, then to the right, click events, and then search for Temple Baptists, and you can follow along with our outline there. There are some things in this life that are seeds to drawing us towards anger. And I just mentioned a few classic ones and some that are just, I'm crazy, and they're personal. But there are seeds of anger that draw us towards wrath. There are some personal hurts that we have, or maybe there's some experiences that you're sensitive towards, that when someone touches on that, when they say something about that, you are drawn to anger quickly. And in that anger, we oftentimes lose control. We lose our perspective. We lose our ability for grace and for peace. And as we push ourselves away from that grace and that peace, we run directly into sin. Let's start reading today in 1 Samuel 25. Now Samuel died, and all Israel assembled and mourned for him, and they buried him in his house at Ramah. Then David rose and went down to the wilderness of Paran, and there was a man in Maon whose business was in Carmel. The man was very rich, and he had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. He was shearing his sheep in Carmel. Now the name of the man was Nabal, and the name of his wife Abigail. The woman was discerning and beautiful, but the man was harsh and badly behaved. He was a Calebite. David heard in the wilderness that Nabal was shearing his sheep. So David sent 10 young men. And David said to the young men, go up to Carmel and go to Nabal and greet him in my name. And thus you shall greet him. Peace be to you and peace to your house and peace to all that you have. I hear that you have shearers. Now your shepherds have been with us. And we did them no harm, and they missed nothing all the time they were in Carmel. Ask your young men, and they will tell you. Therefore, let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we come on a feast day. Please give whatever you have at hand to your servants and to your son David. So at the beginning of this passage, we see that the prophet Samuel has passed away, which is an incredible loss for the Israelites, because Samuel had led that transition of power from judges and the people to a single king, to a monarch, who was Saul. And then we go on to find out that David is to be the next king, and Saul doesn't like that. The jealousy begins to come into him, and now he's wanting to hunt down David and to kill him. And without Samuel's voice of reason, that one who helped transition that power, the people of Israel are in the middle of this chaos between David and Saul. These verses then go on to introduce us to a couple. And it's important that we look at how Nabal, the husband, and how Abigail are portrayed, or how they're presented to us. First, the husband, Nabal, and through my study, I didn't actually know this, but Nabal's name translates to mean fool. So now in Israel, names were connected to the character of the individual. And now we don't know if he was given this at birth, because if he was, ouch. Or it was a name that was given to him because of all of his actions. So whether he earned it or not, people called him Nabal, or fool. We also know that Nabal was rich. You could say he had more money than sense. And that richness came through herds that he had, through goats and through sheep. We also know that he behaved harshly and that he behaved badly. From all of these descriptions, this doesn't sound like a nice guy. Doesn't sound like someone you want to hang out with. He's harsh. He behaves badly. There's no one to check him because he's rich. Who's going to stop this rich man? Who allows him? If people are acting badly, if your brother or sister is acting like, you check him. No, you can't treat me that way. There's no one there to check him. He's a fool. Now, his wife Abigail was introduced to us a little bit differently. She's first described as discerning or of good understanding, which means she's smart. And it only describes her as like smart, but discerning gives you the ability to not only judge what's right and what's wrong, what I shouldn't do or what I should do, but also it implies that you have the perspective to know that my actions will be perceived in such a way, so I know how to not act in a certain way to cause a reaction. I know how to empathize with the person I'm talking to or the people that are around me. This was an intelligent person. She was opposite of her husband, who was a fool. We're also told that she's beautiful in appearance. Now, as human beings, we notice when someone's put together well. We notice attractiveness. But we also know when people use that for their own gain, when they manipulate people. And this is not the way that she's described. We see that she's discerning and happens to also be beautiful. She's the complete opposite of her husband, Nabal. Now, the third person in the story that we meet is David. And to remind you, David at this time, again, is being hunted by Saul. So David is on the run. He's hiding from place to place, trying to serve God and Saul, his king. And in the midst of all of this chaos and all this conflict that he's having, he's protecting God's people from the raids from the Philistines. And specifically in this story, he's protecting Nabal's wealth. He's protecting this man. This harsh, fool, badly behaved man. And let us also remember at this point that David is not king. He doesn't have a wealth of a nation behind him where he can fund all that he's doing. He doesn't have a great fortress to protect him at night. He doesn't have a bed or a place that he has to sleep and can know that he's protected, that he's safe. He truly is trusting day after day in God's promises. David also had the wisdom to wait until Nabal had sheared the sheep. So he knew that he had the prophet at this point to ask him, to ask him for help. And then instead of coming with him with all 400 of his men, he came with just 10. He just sent 10 young men so that as not to intimidate Nabal. And he asked nicely for a meal at the feast day, which is a customary Jewish custom of a feast day after the harvest or after they did this year. That was like for a potluck or a Thanksgiving. We were already going to celebrate. We were already going to have a meal. And he's asking to be a part of that, knowing that. And he also knows that there might have been some time between what David had done and protected from the time that he sheared. So there might have been some time where he forgot that David had provided a service. So he reminds him that during that time, we had treated you well, we had taken care of, we asked for nothing. We treated your staff and you with respect. And last, David didn't ask for a percentage of the profit. He didn't go, well, I was there for 20% of the time, so I expect 20% of the profit. No, he said, would you feed my men? And would you donate what you felt was reasonable? I provided a service for you, and I'm asking for a donation. Here's Nabal's reply. Starting in verse 9. When David's young men came, they said all this to Nabal in the name of David. And then they waited. And Nabal answered David's servants, who is David? Who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants these days who are breaking away from their masters. Shall I take my bread and my water and my meat that I have killed for my shears and give it to men who come from I do not know where? Nabal, true to his name, is a fool. He doesn't just reply with a no. He decides to reply with insults. First, Nabal acts like he doesn't know who David is. Doesn't know who David is? This is like the most famous soldier in the kingdom right now. This is the dude that killed Goliath. Nabal, at this point, was seeing an opportunity for this incredibly powerful, incredibly known, well-known individual, this strong soldier, and he had power over him. He had power over David. Nabal wanted to be the guy that knocked David down a few notches. And then, drunk in his foolishness and pride, Nabal then goes after his relationship with Saul, saying there are many servants who have broken away from their masters. To David, there's nothing farther from the truth. As if David had started this, as if David was trying to get the throne from Saul. David loved Saul. And in fact, David referred to Saul many times as God's anointed. David wanted nothing to do with dethroning Saul or even hurting Saul. There was no worse comment that Nabal could have made than the one he did about David and Saul. And for David, this was his seed of anger that drove him to rage. Nabal finally gets around, after the insults, to denying the request of David's men, which just shows that Nabal didn't care about the human lives that David had used and sacrificed to keep his wealth secure. He withheld all the wealth and all the blessings and all the profit. Nabal's response to David's request came out of anger. Nabal is a powerful man, and powerful people who are drunk with power don't like sharing it. They don't like sharing the spotlight. David was no longer protected by Saul. He was no longer at that kingdom. Nabal has power over David. And in his selfishness, he didn't want to share any of his wealth. Why should Nabal bow to this disobedient child? Why should he give him anything? Out of pride and selfishness, he let his anger show through. And then David responded in this way, 12 through 13. So David's young men turned away and came back and told him all of this. And David said to his men, "Every man strap on his sword." And every man of them strapped on his sword, and David also strapped on his sword. And about 400 men went up after David, while 200 remained with the baggage. Mission accomplished, Nabal. David is now insulted. But what Nabal did not anticipate, and what he's not used to dealing with, is a man of action, a man who is not intimidated by his wealth. David is a soldier. It's like Nabal forgot David was the guy with the sling that killed Goliath. Like, he is not afraid to get his hands dirty. So he called Nabal's bluff. And in David's wrath, he looked at every one of his soldiers and he said, "Strap on a sword. We're going to go hook him up. We're going to go teach him a lesson. Come on." And David, filled with rage, he was on his way to destroy Nabal. He wasn't coming to ask for food. He wasn't coming for an apology. He wanted revenge. He wanted to eliminate Nabal and every male servant that was associated with him. He wanted people to know, "Don't disrespect David, because I will wipe you and anyone associated with you from the face of the earth." Have you ever been that angry? Where someone said something or did something that was so vile that you were like, "I want to wipe you from the face of the earth. I'm insulted that you share the air on this earth with me." You didn't just want to teach them a lesson. You wanted to make sure that lesson was so impactful, people who barely knew them would be like, "Don't cross that person. Don't do that." That you wanted to be the right hand of judgment of God. Pride and selfishness led to Nabal's anger, his anger, and an insulting response to David, which then led to anger, and it grew into wrath. What does this anger do to this? This type of anger that gets in us and causes us to feel and to see and to say those things. Let's look at a few verses. Proverbs 14:29 says, "Whoever is slow to anger has great understanding, but he who hastily has hasty temper exalts folly. Anger causes us to be foolish. It causes us to lack good sense. In the midst of our anger, we lose perspective as to what is good, and we will do things that wouldn't normally have done. Proverbs 29:22, a man of wrath stirs up strife, and one given to anger causes much transgression. So in that inability to know and to lack what's good sense, anger causes us to hurt people. It causes us to say things intentionally to hurt people. And depending on how angry you are, you might break the law. You might punch him. And in some cases, people kill. Laura and I, when we do marriage counseling, we say this often. Your fights are going to happen between a spouse. They're going to happen. But if your heart is out of the fight, get out of the fight. And what we mean by that is if you no longer, your heart is no longer that you love that person, you no longer care about that person, you no longer care about the fight, and you no longer care about what's going to happen, and your heart is out of it, now you're just trying to win. And you're going to win however necessary, which means you will hurt them on purpose. If your heart is out of the fight, get out of the fight. Ecclesiastes 7:9 says, Be not quick in your spirit to become angry, for anger lodges in the heart of fools. When we give over to that type of anger, when we give over to it, that anger begins to take hold and it's intoxicating. And it lodges in our heart. It makes a home. It opens up a chair and sits down and goes, here I am. Let's go buy curtains. It's in us. And now it starts to define who we are. Oh, he's an angry person. Man, it always seems like that person's angry. Do we know people like that? Have you ever woken up and go like, why am I angry? Because anger has made a home in your heart. Numbers 20:9 through 12. And Moses took the staff from before the Lord as he commanded him. Then Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, hear now, you rebels. Shall we bring water for you out of this rock? And Moses lifted up his hand and he struck the rock with his staff twice. And water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank for their livestock. And the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you did not believe in me to uphold me as holy in the eyes of the people of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land that I have given them. Moses was supposed to just speak to the rock. But he allowed his personal anger to take hold of that situation, and he lost control. He lost perspective. He didn't listen to what God said. He said, God, you don't know how to handle this. I don't just need to go over there and speak. I need to get angry, and I need to slam that rock. I need to teach them a lesson because I'm angry. And he made the situation not about God and not about the Israelites who had lost their faith. He made it about him. He made it personal. Thus, Moses lost faith that God could handle the situation. Have you lost faith that God can handle the situation? Ephesians 4:26-27 says, be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger, and give no opportunity to the devil. Anger becomes an opportunity for the devil to take hold of us, to influence us. When we allow anger to take hold and we get into that rage moment, now we're susceptible to all kinds of things. Actions, things that we wouldn't normally do when we're calm. Anger is so, so, so addicting. And as with all sins, some of us are more susceptible to certain sins than others. Anger is one of the ones that I've dealt with, again, all my life. And as I've dug into it over the years, I found out that there are even some medical things that can contribute to it. Like if you have a clinical like pain or ailment, things that cause you to hurt every day or every other week, it can take the joy away from your life. And without that joy, because you're constantly in pain, maybe it's back, maybe it's kidney stones, whatever it is that you're dealing with, now you start the day off raw. And anger comes in. Maybe you have high blood pressure. I have that. But high blood pressure, like any type of emotional stress, all of a sudden you're there. Like, all I did was move the pen. Well, I wanted the pen right there. Why are you angry? I don't understand. Have you ever been angry and be like, I don't know why I'm angry. I don't know why. I'm so sorry. There's some genetic things that cause people just to be irritated towards certain noises and sounds. There's a condition called misophonia, and I know it sounds phony, but there are when individuals experience intense anger or disgust when they're confronted with sounds made by other humans. A few years back, I did the 23andMe with some family members, and in my test, one of the things came back. It said, you are 100% just like everyone else who has this condition. I was like, no, no. So I gave it to Laura. She goes, that's you. You get upset when I change my shampoo. Like, that's you. I'm like, oh, okay. I haven't actually been diagnosed, but and there's nothing that really to do about it. It doesn't hinder me from, you know, from doing regular functions. But there are some certain noises, again, like chewing, that I just can't stand, or tapping. Like, after a while, like, that's grating. I'm getting mad at me. Like, I don't know what it is about tapping. So my family and I decided to go to a baseball game in Florida. We were down for vacation. And we decided, so that morning, I got up, and all of a sudden, I felt the kidney stone I've been dealing with for 13 months. It starts to decide to, like, hurt. Now, it doesn't hurt every day. It comes and goes. It's just kind of hanging out. So we'll see if it passes at any point. And it's not real bad, but it's kind of like, that's irritating. It's kind of like hard to move around, kind of stand. You know, but it started to act up that day. I'm like, perfect. Awesome. So, and then as on our way there, we just, the luck of the draw, we had the car, had all the kids in it. I'm like, okay, 6 Irish kids that are fighting. Perfect. And they're just like yelling and fighting. And Irish kids, like, there's no, like, you know, on the knob, it's like 1 to a 10. Like, none of them are 1 to 10. It's all 11 and up. So they're just loud, like, express everything loud. And now they're angering. So I just wanted to, like, roll all the windows down and have the wind just, like, take away all noise. So I'm like, okay, I can handle this. Don't blow up. They're just kids. It's okay. And like, how long? Oh, traffic. Good. This is perfect. I'm like, you know, I'm trying just to be in a good mood. And then when we get to the baseball game, I have to go to the bathroom. So everyone goes, gets their seats. So I'm the last one to show up. And then there's, you know, we're in 2 different rows because there's a lot of us. In the top row, all the adults by their spouses hanging out. It looks beautiful. I mean, like, the wind's blowing. They all see. And then there's, like, a row down, like, the sun's, like, just running down on that one. And there's my spot by myself. I'm going, perfect. Perfect. So I sit down, and I'm like, don't be angry. Don't be angry. You're preaching a sermon in a couple weeks about being angry. Don't be angry. So I'm sitting there. Well, the guy next to me sits down. And he puts his foot up. I mean, he had to be 6'3", so I feel bad for him. But his foot gets up, and it was coming over that chair right next to me, and his foot's... I mean, just constantly. Like, how could he even keep up that speed? Like, that's incredible. My ankle would have been broke. So I'm trying not to be angry. I'm like, okay, I can get through this. And so then I'm like, okay, I'm going to pray through this. And as I'm trying to pray, now he starts talking. And he's just talking about everything. But, oh, no, number 2. And like, it's like, oh, come on. And I'm thinking about the story of Nabal and David. I'm like, he's Nabal. He's a fool. And I'm David with my righteous anger. I want to eliminate him from ever tapping his foot again. And I'm like, no, I can't blow up in the sky. I can't. And as I pray more, I realize... I'm Nabal. I have these social expectations. I'm the fool. All the anger has to deal with me, not with this man. It's with me. Who am I to be angry at him? I was self-righteous. I was self-centered, and I was prideful. Anger gives us energy. It's not always bad. Sometimes anger gives us energy. It gives us that drive. I'm going to go do that because I'm tired of whatever else has happened. I'm going to do that. I got, you know, you're energized by it. It gives you purpose. I'm tired of that sin happening in my life. I'm going to get rid of it. It gives us focus. I'm not going to get distracted. I'm angry. Mm-mm. But selfish anger drives us to selfish responses. Selfish anger drives us to selfish purposes. Selfish anger drives us to selfish focus. Selfish anger is exceptionally addicting because it's all about us, our gratification, what we want. And if today you're covered in anger, if anger has lodged in your heart for years, the problem isn't with people, it isn't with society, it's with you. It's with you and your inability to love, your inability to forgive. Anger makes us a slave to more anger, and it takes away our ability to see reason, to live life without wounding other people. It takes away our faith and to fully trust in Jesus, who will take care of us, who has our best interests. It opens up the door to influence us. So how do we deal with anger instead of dealing out anger? Let's finish up the story of David, Nabal, and Abigail, starting in verse 14. But one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, "Behold, David sent messengers out of the wilderness to greet our master, and he railed at them. Yet the men were very good to us, and we suffered no harm, and we did not miss anything. When we were in the fields, as long as we went with them, they were a wall to us, both by night and by day, all the while we were with them, keeping the sheep. Now therefore know this, and consider what you should do, for harm is determined against our master and against all his house, and he is such a worthless man that one cannot speak to him." Then Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves and two skins of wine and 5 sheep already prepared and 5 seas of parched grain and hundreds and 100 clusters of raisins and 200 cakes of figs and laid them on donkeys. And she said to her young men, "Go before me, and behold, I come after you." But she did not tell her husband, Nabal. And as she rode on the donkey and came down under the covered mountain, behold, David and his men came down toward her, and she met them. Now David had said, "Surely in vain I have guarded all that this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that belonged to him, and he has returned me evil for good. God do so to the enemies of David, and more also, if by morning I leave so much as one male of all who belong to him." When Abigail saw David, she hurried and got down from her donkey, and she fell before David on her face and bowed to the ground. She fell at his feet and said, "On me alone, my Lord, be the guilt. On me alone, my Lord, be the guilt. Please let your servant speak in your ears and hear the words of your servant. Let not my Lord regard this worthless fellow Nabal, for his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. But I, your servant, did not see the young men of my Lord whom you sent. Now then, my Lord, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, because the Lord has restrained you from blood guilt and from saving with your own hand, now let your enemies and those who seek to do evil to my Lord be as Nabal. And now let this present that your servant has brought to my Lord be given to the young men who follow my Lord. Please forgive the trespass of your servant, for the Lord will certainly make my Lord a sure house, because my Lord is fighting the battles of the Lord. And evil shall not be found in you so long as you live. If men rise up to pursue you and to seek your life, the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living in the care of the Lord your God. And the lives of your enemies he shall sling out as from the hollow of a sling. And when the Lord has done to my Lord according to all the good that has been spoken concerning you, and has appointed you prince over Israel, my Lord shall have no cause of grief or pangs of conscience for having shed blood without cause, or for my Lord working salvation himself. And when the Lord has dealt well with my Lord, then remember your servant." And David said to Abigail, "Blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, who sent you this day to meet me. Blessed be your discretion. Blessed be you who have kept me this day from blood guilt and from working salvation with my own hand. For as surely as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, who has restrained me from hurting you, unless you had hurried and come to meet me, truly by morning there had not been left to Nabal such as one male." Then David received from her hand what she had brought him, and he said to her, "Go up in peace to your house. See, I have obeyed your voice, and I have granted your petition." Abigail was wise, incredibly, incredibly wise. And I just want to first praise all the Abigail-tites out there who have wisdom to have insight in the perspective of the person that they're talking to, or the perspective of how someone might handle or react towards a situation. She knew her husband was selfish and a proud fool, and that he would not respond well to David coming and asking for provisions and for a donation. She also knew David would not respond well to her foolish husband's insults and denial of help. We don't know if she considered all of this, but I like to think that she did, that either subconsciously or she thought about this. She looked at David and thought, he's depressed. He's depressed because the king that he had dedicated his life to was now trying to kill him. This was a soul-crushing depression. He didn't understand why Saul hated him. He just wanted to serve Saul. And as long as Saul was alive, David wanted to serve him as king. He was depressed. He was also depressed because his best friend, Jonathan, in the whole world, was the son of the person trying to kill him. And because of that, they had to be apart. He was away from his best friend. He was depressed because his wife had been taken from him by Saul. And what's worse, she'd been given to another man. He was depressed. He was depressed because he was away from his home, from his bed, from any type of warmth and love and security. He was homesick. He was depressed. David was greatly suffering internally and externally. And now in the midst of all this, he was trying to do what was right and protect God's people. And this man, this evil, foolish man, repaid him evil for good. David was emotionally compromised, and he gave in to anger. I would like to think that Abigail saw this, and that she knew that these things that David was about to do was not out of his own calm judgment, but was out of the emotionally compromised, angry, depressed man. So what does Abigail do? Well, she doesn't run away from the issue. She doesn't get angry herself because this guy, David's about to come in and destroy all that she has. That's her home. She's just out picking or doing or something, trying to relax. She goes, my husband did what? And he's going to do what? Why? She could have gone up to the hill and yelled at her husband, you fool, you've killed us. She could have gone to David and been like, why are you doing this? This isn't how you should act. Stop being a baby. They're just words. No. She was wise. Ecclesiastes 10:4. If the anger of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your place, for calmness will lay great offenses to rest. Instead of pointing fingers, when Abigail found out what had happened, she accepted the circumstance that she was in and decided to try to fix the issue by honoring what her husband should have done. Her first actions to David are symbolically peaceful. She sent that food ahead. No matter how David was going to respond, she was going to honor what her husband should have done. She had already said, I'm going to make the right decision no matter what David does. She rode a donkey, not a horse. A donkey is a symbol of peace. It also symbolizes that she did not consider herself equal to David. And when she first saw him, she bowed down. And she showed him respect in the midst of his selfish anger. She showed him respect. Then Abigail did something that is incredibly difficult. Proverbs 15:18. A hot-tempered man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger quiets contention. Proverbs 15:1. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Abigail knew that David was coming to destroy Nabal and all of his male servants because he had just said it. Surely in vain have I guarded all that this fellow has in the wilderness so that nothing was missed of all that belonged to him, and he has returned me evil for good. God do so to the enemies of David, more also if by morning I leave so much as one male of all who belong to him. Instead of defending her husband or rebuking David in his anger, she could have been angry, which would have stirred up more strife. She takes on the blame. Don't look at Nabal. Put the blame on me. She gives a soft answer and turns away wrath. That's hard. This is a woman who didn't do anything wrong. She wasn't a part of that transaction at all. But she stepped in and goes, blame me. Who does that sound like? I'll take the guilt. I'll take it. And David, in all of his grief and his anger, was brought back to reason through Abigail's wisdom of yielding in the anger. And she conceded that her husband was wrong and that she was trying to just make it right. And the last, and I think the most important lesson that Abigail's wisdom showed was when she said, and when the Lord has done to my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning you and has appointed you prince over Israel, my Lord shall have no cause of grief or pangs of conscience for having shed blood without cause or for my Lord working salvation himself. And when the Lord has dealt well with my Lord, then remember your servant. So in that statement, Abigail reminded David of three things. She brought David back into perspective of who he was in God and who he was to the Israelites. He was the prince. And God had him appointed to be king. Was this how a king should act? She also pointed that it was not for David to do his own avenging. Just like Moses, do not try to work out your own salvation of the situation. God will do the avenging for us. And through both of those points, she also pointed out what was the purpose, what was the motivation of David's anger? Was it selfishness or was it righteousness? Matthew 21, 12 through 13 says, and Jesus entered the temple and drove out all who sold and bought in the temple. And he overturned the tables of the money changers and the seats of who sold pigeons. He said to them, it is written, my house shall be called a house of prayer, but you make it a den of robbers. When Jesus flipped those tables over, it was not because he was insulted, because someone insulted him. It was because the house of God was being used to take advantage of the poor. It was a false gospel that was being perpetrated there. Instead of protecting and leading these people, the Pharisees were profiting off of them. Jesus was angry, but his actions weren't out of anger. These actions were rooted in cleansing, not destroying. To build back up the temple correctly, not to tear it down. Was David's actions to cleanse, to make right? Nabal, don't talk to me that way. That's not cool. Or was it selfish to tear down and to destroy? Anger in itself is not sinful. Again, it can give us energy. It can give us purpose. It can give us focus. And better said, righteous anger gives us power through Christ. Righteous anger gives us purpose towards Christ. And righteous anger gives us focus on Christ. Selfish anger draws us towards our own energy and our own purposes and our own focus on ourselves. And when we focus on ourselves, that selfish anger, for some people, that selfish anger is what keeps them alive. Like they don't know what life's like without being angry. They wake up each day and they have to be angry. They need something to be angry at. And that same anger that's keeping you alive is also draining your life. It's drawing us away from happiness, from joy, and from the peace of Christ. God does get angry. But in God's awesome nature, he turns from anger and he shows us peace. He turns from anger. Righteous anger, deserved anger. And he shows us peace. How many times can you say that you've turned from anger, whether selfish or righteous, to show peace? If you're holding on to anger now, Can you turn from it now? Can you show that person love or peace or forgiveness? Do you have faith that God is going to work out your salvation through this? That He's going to avenge? Let us not be like Nabal and be foolish, living selfishly in our own pride, in our own anger, being irritated by people constantly because they're sinful. Newsflash, we're all sinful. Let us all not be like, let us also not be like David at the beginning of the story, allowing our grief and our pain to stoke anger and let anger live inside of us. Don't give anger a seat in the house. I pray that more of us are going to be like Abigail, able to return wrath with peace, able to accept the situation even when it's not fair, and know that in faith that God will see us through, that He will work out our salvation through that issue. And if you are David at the beginning of the story, I pray that you're also David at the back half of the story. Be reasonable, or rather, be available to be reasoned with. Listen. David turned from his wrath, from his selfish path of vengeance. Don't let anger take hold. Let's pray. Lord, most Heavenly Father, we are so thankful that You love us, that You have shown us peace, that You have shown us mercy when we deserve punishment. I pray, Lord, in our hearts that we would not give room for anger to take hold, that we would not give one seat for anger to be there, to control us. Because when we let anger be there, we take away joy, and we take away peace, and we take away our faith and trusting that You are there, God. I pray, Lord, that we would have the capacity to show love and peace, that we have the capacity to forgive, to turn from the things that are keeping us, Lord, from even worshiping right now. Thank You for this church and for this time to come and to worship You. In heaven's name we pray. Amen.